Fuzzy?
Yes.
Bear left.
What?
Bear left.
Right frog.
What?
Never mind.
That's cute.
Hello and welcome back to Bear Left, Right Frog, a Muppets movie podcast. Hello, Steven. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm so glad that we don't have to go see The Wizard of Oz.
We have hit a remarkable uptick in the quality. We really just kind of bottomed out and we're just going back up.
Mm-hmm. And this movie's fantastic. So it's a nice cleanser to forget the sins of the past.
It is an absolute delight. So today we are talking about the 2011 movie The Muppets, which is it is a canonical sequel to all of the previous movies, but also very much a reboot for the modern age and bringing in a lot of sort of much needed energy into the Muppets franchise.
Yeah, this movie feels much more like the first movie, which you and I both love, than almost any of the in-between movies. It feels like it's cut from the same cloth as the original.
Absolutely. And the sort of development of this movie makes all of that make a lot of sense. I find the story behind this incredibly wholesome because basically Jason Segel and Nicholas Stoller worked together on the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And apparently on that movie, they worked together with Jim Henson's Creature Shop. And then they were like, hey, we love the Muppets. We should make a Muppet movie. Haven't had one of those in a little while. And we like the Muppets. And so they pitched it to Disney and they were like, yeah, okay, you can work on a Muppets movie. And from that moment on, Jason Segel was like obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Talked about it in all these interviews and was like, I'm making a Muppets movie. He was so excited. And you can just tell in every single scene of this movie, like how much love and attention to detail was poured into this to pay homage to sort of the classic, the first kind of three Muppet movies of the 70s and 80s and like everything that made them so magical. They tried so hard to bring it to this one.
Yeah, there are several scenes in this movie where you see him smile or maybe even start to break, like in some of the dance scenes. And I think it's just him having a good time as a human being. Like he's just like, look, I'm dancing with Muppets. Who wouldn't be smiling and laughing?
He is having the time of his life. And that is always the best kind of movie. We are not the only people who also think this movie is great. It was critically and commercially successful. It actually is the highest grossing Muppets movie when not accounting for inflation. If you count for inflation, that would be the like original Muppet movie. Mm-hmm. But this one was very successful in its own right and also like generally has been very highly praised. And old and new Muppet fans alike are a big fan of this movie.
Oh, yeah. Other than the first one, which my kids have seen, they hadn't seen some of the middle ones, but they really love this one. And I think part of the reason is I've listened to the soundtrack about 100,000 times in my house and in my car driving children places. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of funny to me to like see the songs in context of the movie because I haven't seen this movie in probably 3 or 4 years. It's been a little while. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is why this song happens here. But yeah, it's fantastic. My kids really loved it. And so much about it is paying such honor to the first movie and I think what makes the other movies good, right? The music and dancing is really good, and we'll go through the songs as we get to them. But lots of celebrity roles and cameos. It's kind of like the first movie where anytime you see a human being, that human being is famous. It's like all throughout this movie.
Yes, that is so fun to see. They have plenty of meta humor and making a lot of references to like the audience or like them being in a movie, as well as making references to the previous movies,
yeah,
which is super fun. Like the fiction of this movie is that the Muppets, all of the previous Muppet movies exist and are films in this universe, mm-hmm, which fits in with sort of the way the Muppets canon work, where they are actors, but also they like know they're in a movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is all just a lot of fun. And yeah, the number of celebrity cameos in this movie is, I think it might be the highest of any Muppet movie. Just like every single person is somebody.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. And I want to back up a second. You said about how this movie exists in the universe where the other movies exist. That really jumped out at me at one point where we see Gonzo again for the first time. And he has this line later on that says, "Greetings, people of Earth." It's like, oh, yeah, Muppets from Space was a movie.
Yeah.
In this canon, Gonzo is an alien. So it makes sense as a way to greet people.
People of Earth. That's how I greet people.
Is it? That's strong.
Yeah. I just want to establish dominance right away.
It does. I mean.
Also, some other stuff from the background of this. They really went sort of full embracing and sort of in bringing the Muppets brand back and like bringing the Muppets back into popular culture, which is fun because that's also a theme like in the movie itself, yeah. But also externally to it, they like had the Muppets make a lot of appearances like on different talk shows, on SNL, at movie premieres. And then what I thought was really fun is they also created a bunch of fake trailers for this movie that were styled after other popular movies of the time. It's like 2010, 2011 time, which is just like this perfect little time capsule of that era. They created ones that were like parodying Twilight Breaking Dawn, and it was called Breaking Prawn, or like The Hangover Part 2, and it was called The Fuzzy Pack. And it's like, God, I remember these movies.
Wasn't that long ago, but also a long time ago. I was actually surprised when I looked it up that this movie is 10 years old, because it doesn't feel like it to me. It feels like it came out yesterday.
I know. We've talked before that, like, I am the specific age that, like, my childhood was bereft of any new Muppet material.
Yeah.
And so this came out when I was, like, in my early teenage years. And I remember it coming out and being like, oh, Muppets, I like those. And, like, going to see it and everything. And then I don't really understand how that was 10 years ago.
And that's going to get worse as you get older. Just be prepared.
Can't wait.
this brings the Muppets back. And like you said, what happens in the movie tracks with what was happening in the real world, right? There hadn't been a Muppets movie in quite some time. The Muppets had not been as popular as they once were. I think they were a little bit forgotten, and there were little things here and there, but this idea of, okay, well, we got to like reboot the Muppets as a plot point, it perfectly mirrors what has happened. And I think since this movie in the last decade, yeah, there's been some misses. Like there was that weird TV show they did, I think pretty close after this, maybe, and it just like really flopped. There's a new Muppet TV show coming to Disney Plus, but there's a movie after this that we're going to watch next month. And I like the Muppets are kind of back in a way that they weren't before this. And so the movie is like its own weird self-fulfilling prophecy, like meta commentary. I don't know. It makes me happy that the meta level of Muppet humor still works in the modern age. And I think this movie proves it.
Yeah. There is one notable criticism of this movie kind of on that level, which came from Frank Oz, which is so sad. But apparently he was pretty critical of it before the movie came out. And it's like, oh, that's rough. But then after the movie came out, he kind of backed off of that. But the one thing he specifically said is that he had always appreciated a more cutting edge in the Muppets. And he thought this was a little too safe, which I thought was fascinating because we've talked before about being kind of put off by some of the more cutting edge humor of the Muppets.
Yeah.
But he then complimented the film and said he's really happy, like, it has brought people back to the popular culture of the Muppets, and that he's appreciated everything that it's done for the franchise. So that's nice and everything. But I also thought he was like, yeah, I liked it when things were a bit weirder around here, which I can kind of get because I do think in some of those original movies there were more jokes that were specifically for parents in a way that I don't think this movie has. But I think that it just works well enough that it doesn't have to have those. It doesn't have to have something that appeals specifically to parents because, first of all, the parents are the ones who grew up with the original Muppets, so they would want to see it anyway. And, like, it's not pandering to, like, kids in a way. I don't see it having, like, a lot of, like, very juvenile humor that parents wouldn't enjoy. It's just sort of, like, overall family friendly for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think too, some of that position from Frank Oz probably comes from like the deep background of the Muppets, where in those early days, a lot of the Muppet stuff was super edgy and not made for children, right? Like there's some early proto Muppet stuff that is not what we think of as Muppets today. And I would imagine that he had some sort of connection to that time, you know, because of family and everything else. So I get that, but I think at the same time, the movies that we've seen that we didn't like as much were chock full of that stuff. And A, I think it makes it not as good of a Muppet movie, but I think also a lot of that stuff dates these movies. Like a lot of the references in the last couple movies we saw were really dated. And mm-hmm. this movie, because it basically just bypasses all of that stuff, it becomes a bit more evergreen. Yeah, like in 40 years, not everyone's going to recognize all the cameos, just like we struggled to recognize all the cameos in the first few Muppet movies. But there's not like a really like joke that like really doesn't land in the modern era. And I think that will make this movie age better than a lot of the sort of middle era Muppet movies did.
I completely agree with that. Even now, 10 years later, there's some stuff that I can look back on and I'm like, oh, that's kind of like a 2011 cultural joke. But there's very little of it that doesn't just work now on the level that it's already on.
Mm-hmm. So should we get into this?
Let's get into it.
So it starts like a bad 90s music. No, I'm just kidding. Not doing that again. Oh, God. Muppets of Oz. So bad. I just think about it sometimes in my day. It's like, I cannot believe we had to watch that.
It's okay, Steven. I can't hurt you anymore.
I can because I close my eyes and I dream about it. So it opens with home video of Walter, who is a young humanoid Muppet. And he's narrating this good childhood he had with his brother, Gary, who is not a Muppet, but is a human being. There's a joke in here is like, oh, yeah, no, you think we could be twins, which I think is a reference to the Great Muppet Caper, where Kermit the Frog and Fozzie say that they're twins or that they're brothers. So I overlaid that because I've watched all of these month after month, but I like to think that it was a nod.
And it's also interesting because I feel like this sets up a thing where it's going to be like, oh, is this going to be a big part of this movie where like Walter realizes that like he and Gary are so fundamentally different? Or like, no, not really. It doesn't go that dark. It's pretty they're brothers. They're just straight up brothers. They love each other very much, and their biological differences don't really matter to them.
One's a man and one's a Muppet, and they're going to sing about it later.
They are going to sing about it later, but it does not affect their brother relationship, which I think is very nice.
Yeah, no, the love between the brothers is a fantastic thing, and it's what anchors this movie, I think. But as the montage goes on, we see that those differences do become more apparent, right? Walter can't ride and rides at the carnival because he's too short. Very clearly, he's still Muppety and childlike in some ways, and Gary isn't. He's getting older until they're adults, and they're still living together, which is sweet. But it's changed a little bit where like Gary's kind of looking out for Walter, maybe protecting him some. They seem to go to the same job. They leave the house dressed the same way. So they're doing a lot of life together. But I think at this point, the differences are at least clear to them that, okay, Walter is different in some ways.
And the main way that Walter deals with that is he discovers the Muppet Show. And so everyone in their town appears to pretty much be mostly human. And so he sees the Muppet Show and he like gloms onto it immediately, and he becomes completely obsessed with the Muppets. And this also is part of this is like shows differences of him being like more childlike. He gets made fun of for his interest in the Muppets, but his brother Gary also loves the Muppets with him, and they watch it together all the time. And he clearly is very supportive of Walter's lifetime obsession with these performing puppets. And they are continuing to watch it together on TV even into their adulthood.
Yep, there's just a thing. I get the sense they do it every Friday night is Muppet night at their house. Don't miss Muppet night. This is where we get our first song, which is repeated throughout the movie a couple of times, but it's Everything is Great, Everything is Grand.
Everything is great, everything is grand. I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand. Everything is perfect, it's falling into place. I can't seem to wipe this smile off my face.
Just talking about how, hey, life is awesome. You know, we have this brotherly love. The townspeople join them in dancing. Gary, we should say, is in a relationship with Mary, Gary and Mary, and he like goes to get her, and we find out they're gonna go to LA for their 10th dating anniversary, which is a long time to date somebody. And I think Mary has some expectations around this trip that will get unpacked later. And Walter's going to come along because everything is great. And Walter wants to visit the Muppet Studio. So we're just all going to have a fun trip together.
Yeah, this song is absolutely adorable. And the way that it pulls in like everyone in the town to dance together is very sort of like classic movie musical in a way that's all shiny and bright and happy. This is also a song that I performed in my show choir in college. So
awesome.
I both know all the harmonies and it's close to my heart. But yes, there Mary airs a specific grievance in the middle of the song, which is that Gary is always with Walter, which she's fine with. She's fine with. But, you know, she wants some time for just the two of them. And she really wants to spend their anniversary together and for Gary to propose.
Yeah. Yeah, she has this line that it's never me and him. It's always me and him and him. Yeah, you get the sense that Gary and Walter don't see that. And maybe Mary hasn't expressed it. But she feels, you know, sometimes that she's playing sort of second fiddle to this relationship between these brothers. And I think that's tough. It's a tough spot to be in. And I think she handles it at least with a pretty good amount of grace. She's like, yeah, like you said, if we can have our anniversary dinner together, that's great. The rest of the trip will be like the three of us having fun. Totally cool. And everything is great. Everything is grand.
I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand.
You know all of it still, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I also just have to mention that it's just like a little funny thing that their names are Gary and Mary. But my parents' names are Stan and Anne, so this does happen.
Rhyming names. I like that. It makes the couple name easier to smash together. Or does it make it harder because it rhymes? I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, like your parents' couple's name, like Stan, just like long, like really long A in the middle.
I guess we can just be grateful that they're not celebrities and have never been forced to procure a couple name.
That's the real truth there. There we go. So they end up going to L.A. There's this funny, I don't think I've ever noticed it before, and I've seen this movie several times, but anytime they're talking about being in L.A. or you get a scene where you're going to hear background noise in L.A., it's always like cop cars and gunshots and stuff. Like,
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you hear it here outside the Muppet Studio when we see Fozzie's dressing room, which is a doorway that opens into an alley. There's like police lights at the other end of the alley. And then the third time I noticed it is when Gary goes to the hotel or motel or whatever where Mary is, and he opens the door and there's like police sirens in the background, like a couple blocks away.
Well, that's a fun addition to this movie.
Yeah, it's got some commentary on the city of Los Angeles.
Well, when they arrive, they don't have a great first experience because they basically had right for the Muppet Studio so that Walter can get all his tours. And he's adorable. He's wearing a little Kermit the Frog t-shirt. But it is super run down. There's a guy there who is doing like really cheap tours that he clearly doesn't care about at all. You can't actually like access anything. And so Walter is pretty shaken by this, but then he gets into Kermit's old office, which still has everything hanging up into it. And then he's kind of just, he's conducting his own tour for himself, and he's checking out all of the Muppet Show artifacts, which of course is all like actual pictures from the Muppet Show and like really cool sort of memorabilia from the show and previous movies.
Yeah, he's just in awe. He's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm here. I think he sees that it's run down and sad, but he's still determined, I think, to make the most of his trip.
Mm-hmm. Then the plot starts because we have our bad guy walk into the room, whose name is Tex Richmond, because these movies are nothing if not subtle. But this is a really cute addition. They pull out the standard Rich and Famous contract that was a pivotal conclusion to the first ever Muppets movie. Tex Richmond has acquired the studio and says to sort of Statler and Waldorf, who are there, like, showing him around Kermit's office, he says to them that he's planning on making it into a museum. And they mention, looking at the contract, that he gets control of it in, like, a week or something like that, like a very few number of days, unless the Muppets are able to pay him $10 million. But the pivotal thing here, though, is once Statler and Waldorf leave the room, Tex Richmond immediately turns around to his cronies and is like, there's oil under this building. I can smell it. And also the geological survey says so, which I thought was funny. And so basically he's not starting a museum. He's completely lying, and he has plans to just tear it down and drill underneath it.
No, it's quite the situation they're in now. And of course, Walter overhears it because he's where he's not supposed to be. And so he starts screaming, and we see him screaming through the next, like, there's a couple of quick shots where he's like running out the door and screaming. And then he's like screaming on the subway or a bus or something. And then he finally calms down and tells Mary and Gary what's going on. And he is determined to, he's determined to save it, but at the same time, and this is something that Walter will deal with throughout the movie, he doesn't think he can. Like, he doesn't think that he has what it takes to make a difference. And they go off to find Kermit's mansion, which they find because Kermit has put his face on the gates, which I feel like undermines the purpose of having a gate outside of your mansion. Like, why do you have a picture of yourself on them if you don't want people to know where you are?
It actually really reminds me of the Stephen King house. Because, so I'm from Maine, so I'm legally required to bring up Stephen King when I can. But so he has his house is like really, it just looks like a house you would expect Stephen King to live in. It's got a lot of interesting sculptures, and it's dark, and it's like very obvious where it is. And it's like a tourist attraction that people come and take pictures with. But he also lives there, like with his family. So that's the vibes I get from this.
So they're going to get out and look around. But does it seem like anyone's home? And so they're going to throw Walter over the fence, but turns out it's an electric fence, and Walter gets cooked in a very Muppety way, where his eyes are dilated and he's smoking.
And then he dies and the movie's over. No. At this point, luckily, Kermit arrives. He walks up, and there is the light from the headlight shining behind him, and a chorus of angels sing, except it's actually just a choir, traveling choir bus that's going by practicing. Mm-hmm. But and so, because he's a nice little frog, so he brings them all into his house so that Walter can recover from his electric fence. And when Walter wakes up and finds out he's in Kermit's house, he just immediately faints.
Yeah. He's had a real roller coaster of a day, that guy. We learned that Kermit has fallen for Tex's scheme. That, hey, he's going to take it and he's going to build a Muppet Museum on the site. But Kermit very clearly he's sad about whatever has happened with the Muppets. You know, I guess that after doing a bunch of movies and the TV show and stuff, they sort of faded away and fell apart. And he sings this song. It's called Is There More I Should Have Said? And it is genuinely sad. He has all these paintings of his friends in a hallway, which, I mean, who doesn't have paintings of their friends in their hallway? And he's looking at them, and it's clear that the world has moved on, but he has regrets about maybe how that happened. And this really kind of comes to a head as they start singing back to him, and then he pulls back a drape. He has covered the painting of Miss Piggy because Kermit has a lot of heartache.
This song is genuinely moving. And also, Kermit's house is basically a Muppet Museum. He's got all these portraits of everybody.
Yeah, it's, you could just have people through there.
Yeah, that seems fine. Sell tickets, we'll be good. There's another good meta joke here where Gary says that they aren't going to get back together, and Mary says, well, that will be a really short movie.
Kermit isn't sure that he can get the gang back together. So, you know, Walter and Mary and Gary lay out what's really happening. And he's like, well, if we got to do a show to raise us money, like, we got to find everybody. And Walter is the voice of encouragement to Kermit and says, hey, your fans are still out there. You know, we'll come with you as moral support, but at the end of the day, your fans will be there for you. And he kind of gets Kermit kind of up off the couch and back into the game a little bit. And because it's a Muppet movie, you have to move the plot forward by driving, just like the first Muppet movie. So we get this great road trip across parts of the West, trying to round everybody up.
Yes. So it's a beautiful choice. The premise of this part is also that there is the 80s robot who is Kermit's little servant, mm-hmm. I guess, during his time. And the 80s robot also has the power to figure out where every Muppet is by some kind of tracking software, whatever.
Look, they chipped Fozzie. We can just say it. Fozzie got a chip implanted, didn't he?
Yeah. The 80s robot then gets to drive also, which is, I don't know how he got a license. But they are off to go find all of the Muppets, starting, of course, with Fozzie, who is in Reno.
That's right. He is in Reno singing at a casino with the Muppets, which is like the darkest timeline version of the Muppets. They're all scary and weird. Animals is played by a dude, like just like a human man.
It's Dave Grohl.
Is it? Okay, well, I'm not cool.
Okay, I lost it. Yeah, because so they're all like weird, disturbing Muppet creatures. And then Animal's a human. And I was like, oh, one of them's a human. I wonder if that's a celebrity cameo. And then I looked at him again. I was like, that's Dave Grohl. I love it.
Look, celebrity cameos are not my strong suit. I think we've established that by now. They sing this song about the casino and all the rules about, you know, parking and the RV hookups, and it's to the tune of Rainbow Connection. It's like it's a big bummer, right? Because like, look how far Fozzie has fallen. But Kermit comes in. He introduces Walter as a personal friend, which makes Walter faint yet again. Really worried about Walter's like health at this point.
Yeah, he is really low on iron or something.
Something's going on, for sure. But the Muppets kind of make fun of them, so they go into Fozzie's dressing room, which again, like we said earlier, just an alley. Like, they just open a door in a hallway, and is outside. And this is where Kermit, we start to see maybe what happened. Kermit apologizes for not having kept in touch. You know, it seems like maybe they were sending Christmas cards at some point. But, you know, it's like so many things in life where, as life changes, you have people who you were close to for a season and things just kind of drift apart. And it's not anyone's fault necessarily, but it happens. And this is kind of what Kermit is apologizing for. And Fozzie agrees to go with them because Fozzie's in this bad situation. It starts to rain. So he's like, save the cushions off the couch. And the Muppets are scary. And he's like, you know what? I'll join you. Let's do this thing.
Heck yeah. Got Fozzie coming along to the next stop, which is, of course, to get Gonzo. And Gonzo's made some interesting life choices, and he's some kind of, like, plumbing boss. He runs a company called Gonzo Royal Flush.
So good.
And so when they come in, he's like, I'm very busy, important. I only have 30 seconds. And he has them all sit on these toilets, and it's like, okay.
Which are from the used executive line.
Yeah, that seems
so. Certified pre-owned toilets.
In their 30 seconds, Kermit keeps trying to say something, anything, and Fozzie keeps interrupting him. Mm-hmm. And they basically like finally spit it out, but Gonzo says no, that he will not be returning to their shenanigans. But then Walter, heart and soul of this movie, tells Gonzo that when he watched him as a kid, his stunts made him feel like he could do anything. And now Gonzo is very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it really touches Gonzo. And I think when you look at sort of the core Muppet cast, you don't view Gonzo as the emotional center, but clearly he still inspired a lot of people, inspired Walter, definitely. And so I guess it's Camilla, but an old chicken comes up. I guess, you know, they've been together a long time now. And this is the only movie where the chickens are subtitled, so you can actually see what she says. And it's along the lines of, look, it's okay if you want to go do this, you know, that's really what makes you happy, kind of, you know, it's okay with me if you need to go do this. And so before we know it, we see Gonzo on the roof. He rips off his suit. Every day he's worn his cape underneath the suit. It's going to be bunchy. People are going to notice.
Yeah, that's... He really seems like he's having a midlife crisis.
Well, it gets even worse because he jumps off the roof and lands in a big box of packaging peanuts. And then he has this remote that I guess he's been carrying around with him. Again, not a good idea, because it is to destroy the business. And I guess if he can't have it, no one can. And if his employees can't work for him, he'll just murder them because he explodes his plumbing warehouse.
Yeah, of everything in this movie, that was a choice I think they didn't need to make. That didn't need to happen. But okay. Is Gonzo mentally okay in the time that has passed? Someone want to do a checkup?
I mean, I haven't ever blown up a warehouse, but it seems like some things have happened between then and now.
On the other end of the spectrum, Animal, who has previously been depicted as not having the best self-control, shall we say, mm-hmm. is now in anger management meetings and trying to prevent himself from getting out of control. There's a few different celebrity cameos here, including most prominently from Jack Black, who's just playing himself. Like, he just is Jack Black, and everyone just calls him Jack Black and does not remark at all on the fact that he is in this anger management meeting, which is pretty good. And apparently, Animal's trigger word that gets him angry is drums. So when the Muppets show up and they're like, "We need you to drum again," he's like, "No, that's his trigger word. I'm his sponsor. I'm here to help you, Animal." But unfortunately, Jack Black also has a lot of trigger words, and so he, pretty quickly he gets angry. And then the entire group is in a giant fist fight.
Mm-hmm. And Animal runs away during this chaotic scene. Jack reminds him, like, don't play, stay the course, even though Jack Black is like a start of this huge fight. But Animal's going to join them, this new refined Animal with a calm Zen center, which I think is really funny. Like, I think if you had to pick any character to do this with, Animal is the funniest one.
Yes. And it makes for some very good gags later in the movie.
Yeah, later on, like, someone asks for a drum roll and he just plays like a triangle.
Yes. Good. And he looks so disgruntled with himself while he's doing it too.
Yeah. At this point, 80s Robot suggests a montage to get the other Muppets, because again, everyone knows this is a movie, and this movie's gonna be 8 hours long if we have to see every interaction. So they start rounding up other Muppets. The rest of the band was playing in the subway for money. Beaker and Honeydew, I think, is the funniest. They're at the Hard-On Collider, and Beaker is sucked into it, and then he comes out tiny. Poor Beaker.
Sam the Eagle also has a TV show called Everything Stinks, which sounds about right.
Yep.
And also, every time they're getting one of these, they have like a shepherd's... What's that called?
Crook? Shepherd's crook?
Crook, yeah. Like a shepherd's crook that they're just like grabbing them with and pulling them off screen. And then Sweetums, who in the first movie got left behind by the Muppets after they got a new car, is left behind again, running after them, saying like, no, I want to get back together too. Yeah. Don't leave without me.
From the same car lot he was working at 40 years before. So they're all together. People are like, look, we need Piggy. We need Miss Piggy. This doesn't work without her. Kermit is not into this idea. Like, this feels like whatever happened between all of them, whatever happened between him and Piggy is worse, and he doesn't want to face it. And the 80s robot informs them that she's in Paris, so they decide to go there. Kermit relents. They have to travel by map.
That's very fun.
Just fun. So we see their car come out of the water onto a beach, and they drive to Paris, and they got to go get Miss Piggy.
They find her office because she is apparently the plus size editor at Vogue. So at like the Vogue Paris offices, it's all very Emily in Paris. But her receptionist is Emily Blunt, playing her character from The Devil Wears Prada, which is a really fun inclusion here, and tells them that Miss Piggy is busy for 6 months and can't possibly get a meeting in for them. And so they're like, oh, no, no, no. So they end up going back out into the hall and deciding to do Muppet Man, yes. Which is extremely funny considering there's an actual man there with them.
Yeah, just send Gary in.
Nope, that not acceptable. So they decided to do Muppet Man, and so Fozzie is the head, and he's got a fake mustache on, and then everyone else is just piled into this very tall, funky suit as they stumble in and say, I have an appointment.
Yeah, like stumbling, breaking things. Once they go into the office, Piggy's like, oh, please sit down, which of course they can't do. And so like they try, and then the Muppets just collapse into a big pile. Piggy like bangs her head in the desk, like, oh, I can't believe I fell for Muppet Man, of all things. But then she sort of stops being upset when she sees her Kermie. And she sort of has a heart eyes moment. But as we see, there's going to be more to this. They've got some things they need to deal with.
Yeah, she kind of catches herself and she's like, no, I said I would never go back. And then mm-hmm. she's like, before we do anything, I need to talk to you alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our required very good Kermit outfit.
Yes.
Because they go out to walk through the streets of Paris together. And he's got like a black turtleneck and a coat over it. And it's so good.
It's really good. It's fantastic. I don't think we get it spelled out exactly what has happened, but Piggy had a house or built a house, had a house built and that they were going to live in. But then Kermit bailed on that plan. And he says something that I really don't like this line in this movie. I wish this line wasn't in this movie. He blames his actions that hurt her on her tendency to be dramatic. It's like, you know, maybe if you weren't so dramatic, I wouldn't have to make decisions that keep hurting you. Like, that's a terrible thing to say to somebody. Like,
it really is.
Like, the way you respond is your responsibility, not a knee jerk to someone else's actions. And it's just, it's terrible. It really jumped out at me in this viewing. I've noticed it before, but this time I was like, that line shouldn't be in here.
They do not have a healthy relationship.
Nope.
She should not get back together with him.
Agreed.
At this point, however, she actually decides that she's not. And she says, no, I'm not going back with the group. And I'm not coming back for the show, which honestly, fair enough.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of left in a lurch, though, because they think, like, well, no one's going to give us this show without Miss Piggy. And so as a backup option, they decide to go get the Muppet Miss Piggy so that they have someone who is vaguely adjacent to her.
Muppet Piggy is terrifying.
Yeah, she's really scary.
So they start going around to pitch a bunch of TV people on this. This reminds me a lot of Muppets Take Manhattan when they're trying to pitch their show to a bunch of producers. And then it's just like, no, no, lots of doors slammed. Kind of a similar vibe here. But then they run into Veronica, played by Rashida Jones, who's like, look, y'all aren't famous anymore. She has this like bullseye chart, and like the closer to the center you are, the more popular you are. And she has to like unroll one side of the chart, and like 3 feet over are the Muppets. She's like, y'all, like, no one cares anymore. But it turns out that there's this show called Punch Teacher, which I guess does what it says. You know, it's popular. Muppets, you aren't relevant anymore. And Kermit kind of gets on the soapbox for a second. Like, look, I think kids are smart. They deserve better TV. And then Donald Glover comes in as Veronica's assistant and smashes Kermit with the door. It's like Kermit's speech is over and says, oh, well, there's actually a gap in the schedule because of a lawsuit. You know, you have 2 hours free in 2 days. You got to fill it with something.
So there's their chance.
Yeah. Stars aligned.
Stars aligned. She does tell him a few things. She says that they better get a celebrity host or she's not going to air their special. They have to have some kind of celebrity there to anchor them. And that basically they have 2 days and they have to do everything themselves and get the special off the ground. How does that make your event planner self feel?
I don't. Yeah, it would be terrible. I don't think they're given any money to do this. Like, they're going to raise the money, but they're not getting paid to put the special on itself. It doesn't seem like. But yeah, that's a lot of work to do. which we see when they get to the theater, it's basically falling apart.
Yeah, it's actually condemned. They go past a sign that says this building is condemned. So that's exciting. That's what you want to see in a place you're about to put the public in. They start to say, like, well, you know, let's clean this up. And it's immediately very boring. And they're like, oh, my God, why is this so hard? Why is nothing getting done? And Walter says, hey, you guys have to work to music. And they're like, oh, yeah. So then they play We Built This City.
Yeah. Yep. Got a Starship song in there.
Yeah, and then we have a beautiful cleaning montage. You know, you got to travel by map, you got to drive to find the Muppets, and you got to work in a cleaning montage.
Yep. So we see a bunch of things kind of in quick succession. My favorite is the rats. And like, Rizzo has no lines in this movie, I don't think. Like, he's very downplayed after the last couple of films.
Mm-hmm.
He and his buddies are scrubbing, like they got bubbles and they're like skating or something on top of the bubbles. Again, like in the kitchen in Muppets Take Manhattan. That's what I thought of. I love the scenes where rats do things, basically, is what I'm saying. Beaker is being chased by a vacuum cleaner. The Swedish chef takes a flame gun to the living but super nasty food left in the refrigerator. Again, another murder by fire in this film.
Yeah, a lot of murder, but also that food looks so disgusting that I was pretty happy when he took a flamethrower to it, because I was like, oh, no, 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 no.
Yeah, they're like, hey, like, you're gone.
Walter's having a great time cleaning up with the Muppets, but Gary and Mary are having a little bit of a rough patch. Like, she came here to see Los Angeles. They established earlier in the movie that, like, seeing LA was one of the big things that she wanted to do, like, as a life goal, and so she's pretty disappointed that they've just been here with the Muppets and, like, helping Walter this whole time. But then Gary's like, well, I can't leave Walter right now, like, he needs me, so how about you get a sort of head start on sightseeing, and you can go out by yourself today, and then I will join you tomorrow, and it'll be okay. She's like, okay, but also I think Walter's pretty happy here, and Gary sees that, like, Walter's having a really good time and, like, getting along with all the Muppets super well.
Yeah, this is where we begin to see that Walter probably has a different path forward than Gary. That Walter is a Muppet. He's being accepted by the Muppets. And I think it hurts Gary to see that a little bit. I think he while he should have been upset with how he handled things with Mary, he's actually upset about how maybe Walter's kind of growing past him a little bit.
Yeah. Which I can understand, you know, but also he should pay a little more attention to his girlfriend.
Yeah. How did they make it 10 years? He's a dope.
Yeah.
So the next morning, rehearsals start, and Miss Piggy shows up. She's decided to come after all. Muppet Piggy is not happy about this, and so they have, like, a karate fight, and Piggy wins very quickly because, as we've established, angry Miss Piggy in a fight is very scary, and you don't stand a chance against her. She makes it clear, though, that she didn't come back for Kermit. She's there for the group, and once this is done, she's going back to Paris. This isn't her trying to get back together with her froggy love. This is something she's doing for old time's sake, for her friends, and that's all it is, and Kermit doesn't need and shouldn't read anything more into it.
Which, again, I really support her in this.
Yeah. Yep.
At this point, they're, like, in rehearsals. They're like, great, we got Miss Piggy back. Things are going well. But they try to run a rehearsal, and it's just really not working. And Veronica is there, and she's like, this is a disaster. Like, they try to do the opening song, but no one can keep time because Animal still refuses to play the drums. And everybody's missing their cues and everything. And Kermit still hasn't found a celebrity host, and so she's getting pretty frustrated with them.
Yeah, and in this time, Walter's also realizing that he doesn't know what his talent is, so he doesn't know how he can contribute to the show, and he's worried about that. But Kermit kind of has too much going on to deal with that directly at the moment, I don't think. And so they kind of move on from that, and the Muppets are in disarray. There's even this scene between Piggy and Kermit where, like, you know, people expect us to do a duet. And she's like, well, I have a new partner for that. And, of course, it's Pepe the Prawn. And he's very into it because he doesn't do anything halfway, I guess. he just is looking for love
in all the wrong places.
We get a song here where Mary is out in the city. She goes to like a 50s style diner, Mel's Drive-In, and Sarah Silverman is the person at the front door and shows her her seat. And there's this Party of One song, and it goes between Mary singing about being by herself, that Gary has let her down yet again, but you know, she can have a good time on her own. She doesn't need him to have a good time. And we see Piggy singing as well about Kermit, that, you know, I don't need your approval. I don't need your presence even to enjoy life.
I'm having a meal.
It's a great song with a great message, and I really find this to be, I think it's not my favorite song in the film, but I think it's one of the most fun because of the dancing that these two characters do.
Yeah, I mean, Amy Adams is just so delightful in everything she does,
yep.
Especially when she plays sort of the like really sort of fun musical character that she's done a few times, and so it's just perfect.
Yeah, it's she kills it in this movie, absolutely kills it. But the problem still remains that there's not a celebrity host. At this point, there's 12 hours left, and they end up like, well, what if we go talk to Tex Richmond? That doesn't go well. We get part of Tex's song here where we learn that he gold-plated a cat, and he made bread with money instead of flour because he has so much money he can do that, I guess. I mean, it's one way to get gluten-free bread, but it's not the best way.
I'm concerned about the bread that you eat.
I mean, it's gluten-free, but there's not money in it. It's just regular gluten-free bread. But yeah, he explains, look, in addition to me taking your theater, I get to take your name because there is this clause in the contract. And so I get them up. It's branding, and I'm going to give it to the Muppets at the end of all of this because Muppet Piggy is very upset that they got kicked out of the show. And so, like, they go to Tex Richmond hoping for some grace, and it just, everything gets worse.
This was interesting because I just been thinking at this point in the movie, like, I feel like the stakes aren't high enough where they're fighting for their studio, but, like, ultimately it's just a building, so it doesn't really matter that much. And I got to this scene, and I was like, oh, yes, this does raise the stakes. Thank you, movie.
Yeah, because losing, like, their name, their brand, that's no good.
It's also interesting because their character names are just their names, so, like, if you lose the brand for Miss Piggy, what's your name after that? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you have to take your corresponding Muppet name.
Oh, no.
It's trade. Kermit's just completely defeated at this point, right? It's more bad news. And he kind of slouches away. And Piggy's like, we're going to do this. We're going to go find a celebrity guest. We're going to make this work. We don't need him. We can do it ourselves.
This isn't that relevant to the movie, but at this point I had to pause the movie for like a good 10 minutes and Google things because this entire scene takes place outside this building, and there's this art piece that's right behind them that you can like see people walking around and underneath whatever. It's this giant red modern art sculpture, and it looks exactly like a sculpture that's in Chicago, but I was like, what? I was like, did they film this in Chicago even though it takes place in Los Angeles? Why would they do that? That's so weird and confusing. But they didn't. They filmed in Los Angeles. And I like went on this whole spiral until I found out that there are at least two of these. There might be more made by the same artist. And so, yes, there is just one in Los Angeles that they chose to like film the scene in front of. And again, not actually relevant to the movie, and they don't mention it at all. But if anyone else has ever wondered about that, that's what happened there.
I'm glad you're on that beat.
It's a really distinctive statue. And I was like, this is so confusing.
People should check out your podcast on Relay FM, where you talk about art.
Hey, thank you for the plug. It's called Pictorial. Maybe we'll do an episode about sculptures that confuse me.
That's like a perfect topic. I love it. What city am I in? I don't know. It's hard to tell. So we pick back up at this point with Gary and Mary. She's back at the motel. She's reading a thesaurus, which is nerdy, I think, pretty nerdy. But she's doing it because she's looking for a bunch of burns, because she's been alone all day. She wants to let him know that he blew it. And so she reads all these different words that mean alone, all these different sentences. And then, you know, it come to find out that he didn't make any specific dinner plans. So she like storms out. It comes up in a few minutes that, oh, this is their big anniversary dinner that she was like, that's the one thing she asked for on this anniversary trip, was dinner could just be the two of them. And Gary blew it. And so he goes to the theater, talk to Walter about it. And Walter's still freaking out about not having a talent. And they kind of get into it about like whose problem is worse. And Walter says like, well, we came out here to see the Muppets. He's like, no, we didn't. We came out here because it was my anniversary with Mary. And you kind of see that their view on things is different. And you start to see some of that stress that is coming out of that. But Gary realizes what he's done. He rushes back. He shows back up at the motel in a tux, but she's left a note saying that she loves him, but he needs to decide if he's a man or a Muppet.
This is, of course, the perfect opportunity to break into song, and a truly amazing song called Am I a Man or Am I a Muppet, in which Walter and Gary both sing this, and including the lines, if I'm a Muppet, then I'm a very manly Muppet. If I'm a man, then I'm a Muppet of a man. Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
Am I a man or am I a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
If I'm a Muppet, then I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
Am I a Muppet?
Muppet.
Or am I a man?
Am I a man?
If I'm a man, that makes me a Muppet of a man.
A Muppet of a man.
It's great. This is actually the only Academy Award that the Muppets franchise has ever won. They won for Best Original Song for this song, which is pretty awesome.
That is awesome.
And we have like a Muppet version of Gary that shows up to sing this song with him. And we have a human version of Walter, who is Jim Parsons, which is perfect.
It's because really good
Jim
casting.
Parsons really is a Muppet of a man.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah. This is a joke that gets made at my house about me because I've got long hair and it's now and it's crazy and sticks up everywhere in the morning. And so sometimes like one of my kids just asks me if I'm a man or a Muppet, like out of the blue.
That's really cute.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the song and I think it's super well done, where you have them singing together and they see their other versions of themselves. And they kind of decide at the end of the song that Gary decides he's a man and Walter decides he's a Muppet. And so Walter is where he needs to be, and Gary goes back to Smallville, their hometown, to apologize to Mary. He knows what he needs to do, and it's good. I think that they both made the right decision for their characters.
Absolutely. I think this is really well done. This does lead into my one main criticism of this movie, which is that it is too long, because this happens, and there's still like another 45 minutes left in this movie, even though it's kind of the emotional climax to like the one of the biggest emotional plot lines of the movie. And I do think they could have trimmed it down a bit. It's a great movie overall, but it is weirdly long for a Muppet movie.
Yeah, and I think so too. I think that this could have been resolved later, but I get it. I mean, they are the B plot, so I can kind of understand it. And they do get their moment at the end, which we'll talk about. So it is, the pacing is a little weird, because at this point, like, they still haven't started the show, which, you know, is going to be a big part of this movie. But before they do that, they've got to steal Jack Black, who is in a parking lot full of movie trailers. And he comes out and he's got like the motion tracking suit and they glue like ping pong balls on you for the computer to see you. He's dressed in one of those. And they kidnap him. They tie him up in sort of this weird, like, sort of like karate taekwondo. Like, they're flying through the air, karate chopping. And then it like cuts to black and white and it's still for a second and shows their name kind of motif. And they hog time and throw him in the back of the car.
This is fine. Just a little bit more light crime to sprinkle on top of this.
Yeah.
They do point this out, though. Like, they show up. They're like, Kermit, we got a celebrity host. And he's like, oh, my God, who is it? Like, Jack Black. And he goes, wow, where is he? And they're like, in the trunk. And then they say something like, what's a bigger crime? Lightly inconveniencing Jack Black or making us lose our theater? And he's like, the kidnapping is the bigger crime.
Yeah, Kermit's not thrilled about this turn of events, but it's time for the show. So they're at the theater, things are going to get started, but we see Tex Richmond, he has the TV on, he's fencing with his bear assistant, whose name I don't ever know or remember. Does he have a name?
Probably, but I also do not remember it.
He was in Muppets from Space as like the number two guy. Anyways, fencing training is just him like beating up on his bear sword fighting partner. And then he like stabs the sword through the TV, which I think is because I've been tuned into homages in this movie. In the Batman, like old Batman movie, Joker punches a TV with like a punching machine. And that kind of made me think of that. But the Muppets who are working for Tex kind of realize that they're working for the bad guy. Like, oh, maybe we're on the wrong side of this stuff.
They're starting to clue into it.
Yeah. I don't know why it took him this long. It seems like this probably isn't the first evil thing he's done.
Well, we'll get into that more in a little bit. But first, the show is starting. And it certainly is not going great. The big thing is that the audience, like the in-person audience, is empty. There's like one guy there and it's Zach Galifianakis. But so Veronica's pretty upset about that. And also Jack Black has been hogtied to a chair, but like they've done him up in like a tux. And he's upset about that too. He's like, no, why am I dressed so fancy? My image. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of funny. But they just put him on stage and he keeps shouting that he's been kidnapped, but the audience just thinks it's a bit, so they just laugh.
Yeah, I like that he's telling them very plainly, but they just think that it's part of the show. I like that. I like that humor a lot. So they're getting the show going. It's not going super great. Like, they kind of start to find their rhythm, but Gonzo has this segment called Head Bowling. He asks for a drum roll and we get the triangle ring from Animal. But his fingers get stuck in the bowling ball. And so anytime we see Gonzo after this, his arm is swinging, fully extended with a bowling ball on the end of it, which is a nice Gonzo gag. But you know, they're trying to get their legs under him. And we flash over and we see Mary and Gary. They're eating dinner at her house, having that anniversary dinner. And they're like, you know, I think we need to be there. And Gary's like, no, I decided to come back. You know, we're here. We're together. So Mary really insists that they should go back. So they travel by map and show up backstage. And as it goes on, like, fundraising calls start to trickle in. People start showing up. People start paying attention. And it is kind of slowly building, kind of snowballing into a success.
Yeah, you're even starting to get, like, some celebrity guests to show up as well, to kind of be there to take calls. They have a little bit where Whoopi Goldberg, Selena Gomez, and a child. The kid from Modern Family, which is a show I've never seen, so I don't know his name. But they show up and they're like, yeah, you know, we saw that this was happening and we decided to, you know, do our brand some good and show up. Selena Gomez says, like, I don't know who you are. My agent just told me to be here. They have more and more people show up, including John Krasinski and Neil Patrick Harris, who at one point says, I don't know why I'm not hosting this, which I thought was my favorite timely joke, because in 2011, Neil Patrick Harris was in the middle of hosting every award show on the planet for like 5 years in a row. So I thought that was cute.
That's great. We see a couple more acts. So we see the Barbershop Quartet do Smells Like Teen Spirit, which is delightful. Because
yes.
as they pop into the scene, they're all holding like scissors and combs, but Beaker shows up with an axe. It's like, oh no! Like, puts it down and gets up a hairdryer, I think. They go to shave Jack Black and like hair's flying everywhere, and they put a hot towel over his face and they pull it off. His head is tiny and his voice is really high, which is fantastic.
While he's yelling, you're ruining one of the best songs ever written.
Yeah. And again, the crowd just loves it.
Yeah. They think he's in on it. They're having a great time. Our antagonist is not done yet, though. Tex Richmond is seeing that everything is working and that they're actually starting to raise the money that they need. And so he shows up to take matters into his own hands, literally, and cut power to the building. So he manages to cut that power off. And there's a few minutes where everyone's kind of freaking out and they don't know what to do. But then Mary and Gary show back up, and Mary, using her super skills, she is such a delight, but she knows all about wiring and how hardware works, and she manages to get the electricity right back on for them.
Yep. So the show keeps rolling on, money keeps coming in, and we finally get to the big kind of emotional moment for Piggy and Kermit. So Kermit realizes they need to make things right. He tells Scooter to go out on stage. He's like, no, like, I'm behind the scenes. He's like, no, you can do it. Go out there. Kermit tells Scooter to picture the audience naked, that's what he does. And there's this great scene where Scooter's on stage, and then it cuts back to the audience, and they're all, like, in their underwear. He's like, oh, it worked. But Piggy comes into Kermit looking at there's this photo of them that I think is from the wedding in Muppets Take Manhattan, and it's ripped in half, and Piggy has one half, Kermit has the other half, and he's looking at it, and Piggy kind of comes in and interrupts him, and he says, you know, that if they fail, they're not going to see each other again, and he doesn't want that. And so they go out, they do their duet. I guess Pepe was fired from this gig. And of course, it's Rainbow Connection. Kermit starts on a log, you know, harkening back to that great opening shot in the first film. And all the Muppets come out. They're all singing it. The crowd is singing it and swaying to it. And even Animal is so moved that he puts aside his Jack Black teaching and picks up his drumsticks and just goes at it as the song builds.
Seeing Kermit come out and start to play Rainbow Connection made me smile so much, especially because they had the, like, weird parody version of it earlier in the movie, and bringing it back, like, right to the classic, like, him sitting on the log, and they have these, like, projected stars, and all the Muppets are there singing along. Like, it was just really sweet.
No, it really was, and it's the emotional high point for the Muppets in this, and it's great, and they're coming up on raising the money, but there's time for one more act. Show ran a little quick, and earlier Walter had been called on stage, and he, like, ran out the side of the theater, like, through the wall, like, you know, Walter-sized hole through the side of the building. But they're going to call upon Walter, and Gary goes to find him. Is like, you know, Walter, you've believed in everyone else, but now it's time for you to believe in yourself. And we hear, as everyone is backstage freaking out, we hear Walter, and he's doing this, I guess, whistling, performing. What is the performance word for whistle? Is it just whistling? Is there a fancier word? I feel like you should know this.
I don't know this. I think it's just whistling.
It probably is, but, like, I don't, you know, sometimes there's, like, fancy words that I don't know, but you know.
Do you want me to Google a fancy word for whistling?
Perfect. So he is whistling. He's doing this song by Andrew Bird, and the crowd just goes wild. Everybody loves it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a pretty impressive amount of whistling. I can't whistle at all, so I'd be very impressed.
Yeah, I can't either.
The money is just pouring in, and the phones are ringing off the line, but Tex is still out there, and he sees that they are so close, and so he just drives his car into a telephone pole to knock everything down. So that they shut off the lines and no more money can come in. And the money tracker just is so close to $10 million, but it slows down to a crawl, and then it ends at $9,999,999. And also they all, like, act so sad and defeated at this moment, but, like, does not one of them have a single dollar in their pocket?
Right. I had the same thought. Like, just go slap a dollar up on the stage. But, you know, the clock struck midnight, and they were short. So it's not good. Tex comes in to declare victory after his ragey car crash. And Fozzie ends up hitting the dollar sign with his head, and it turns out they've only raised $99,999. So not even close.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I actually feel way better now. We weren't close at all.
Which I kind of get, you know, I kind of respect that.
Yeah.
So they accept defeat, and it's really pretty dark. Like they end up walking out through the audience, like through the theater, and the audience is just sitting there, and the Muppets are walking with their heads down. But they get out to the lobby, and Kermit's like, hey, you know, we failed together, so that's not failing at all. It's not important with the building and the names. You know, our friendships are what are important. You know, kind of like the Kermit morale speech. And it's really sweet because they totally failed. I mean, they weren't even in the ballpark. And Kermit acknowledges it and tries to help everybody through it.
So they go out with their heads held high, and they discover that the entire street has just been taken over with a mob of Muppet fans and, like, reporters and all these things, and people are holding signs and people are cheering for them, and they are just so, so excited to see the Muppets, which is, like, of everything we've talking about, like, what's happening in this movie being a self-fulfilling prophecy for, like, the Muppets franchise overall. And so having the emotional culmination be like, people do care and people do really love the Muppets regardless of their sort of in-movie quest, was such a sweet sort of message to finally end this on. But they go out to, like, basically stage door, and they're all meeting the fans and everything. And they even include Walter and say, like, hey, like, come meet your fans. You're a Muppet now.
Yeah. They're so kind to him. And, like, you know, we wouldn't be here without Walter. And so it's definitely well earned. And we see kind of Gary tear up at this, you know, Walter kind of realizing his dream. And then we get our finale song, which is a new rendition of Everything is Great, Everything is Grand. Tex has this line of, like, you've already sung this song. Such a such a grumpy man.
Yes. And so, you know, they are happy, they are thriving, regardless of whatever else happens. And then, finally, I honestly thought I had missed this somehow earlier in the movie. But no, finally, Gary does get down on one knee and proposes to Mary. Although, instead of saying yes, she is so excited and she looks right at the camera and says, mana, mana.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a yes.
It's not a yes, but they all sing that. At some point in these songs, Gonzo finally lets go of the bowling ball and it hits Tex. And then he kind of comes up from that with his head spinning and decides to give it all back to the Muppets. I guess, LOL, head injuries, but everyone wins.
Yeah, a thing through the movie is that he was physically incapable of laughing, and he gets hit with the ball and he starts laughing. So I guess their implication is that they've, like, fixed whatever was broken in him, and now he's nice.
That's how brains work.
That's exactly how brains work, and it's worth a shot with the other oil barons of the world, I guess.
And that's the Muppets.
That is the Muppets. It is just so much joy and great music, just a really good return to the great original Muppet songs, and I'm really happy with it.
It's so good, and it brings the Muppets into the modern era in a way that, you know, I'm not sure would have been possible in other hands. I think the fact that it was written by a couple of people who were genuinely, like, wholesomely excited about it, it pays off so well. And I think it's great. It's almost perfect, except for Kermit being a jerk.
Yep, it's so close, but overall, I'll definitely take it.
Yeah, I mean, better than the last two or three movies.
Well, it did well enough that it not only brought the Muppets generally back into the public consciousness with lots of projects, but it spinned off into a sequel, just called Muppets Most Wanted. And this is a film that I have never seen, so I'm very excited to watch it.
Oh, it's going to be fun. That'll be next month.
Yeah, and that'll be the last one.
Yeah, well, until there's a new Muppet movie.
That's true. You never know.
I feel like we're on the hook for our lifetimes. Anytime there's a Muppet movie we have to watch and get together. I'm down with that. I think it'd be fun. I'm going to miss this show when we're done next month.
Yeah, same. So hopefully they'll make more. It's been Muppets Most Wanted came out in 2014, so they're due for one.
It's been a minute.
All right, well, I'll see you next month.
All right, bye. She's not back there for Cromit.
For Cromit.
For Cromit.